you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 246 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyro, your host once again. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday season as we come up upon the new year, 2021. Thank you for being a part of this podcast for this past year, trying as it has been. But anyway, on to better things. Today, my guest is Glenn Frost. Glenn is a tax attorney, runs a firm, Frost Law Firm in Annapolis, Maryland, close by to where I am now. And Glenn's a little bit different from our traditional guest in the sense that his practice has grown from a small practice to one that I would say is mid-sized now. And so it's really interesting to have his perspective looking back on that growth and how he was able to accomplish it and what things changed over the course of time. And so I think it's a really good opportunity for us to kind of look forward to what the future may hold for our firms. So without any delay, here is Glenn Frost. Glenn Frost, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, Glenn. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So my name is Glenn Frost. I'm an attorney, but started out as a CPA with a background in both audit as well as tax. And, you know, gradually grew my firm into what it is today.
Did you start as a CPA firm and then add the law to that business, or how did that?
I started out at an accounting firm at Grant Thornton, right, one of the, let's say, top 10 accounting firms, and, you know, decided, hey, I don't want to be just an accountant forever. So went into law school. While in law school, I was already a CPA.
Right.
So I, I worked for a law firm in a CPA capacity, but doing a lot of the same type of work that I'm doing today at the law, tax controversy type work.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the questions that we typically ask folks who come on the show is, did you know that you were going to do tax law when you entered law school? Most people say, no, I thought I was going to be, you know, public defender or something. But I guess in your case, you really did know you're going to do tax law.
Yeah, you know, I was torn. I was
really,
because, yeah, you know, I, as an auditor at Grant Thornton, I had done a lot of audits for some public companies. And so I was torn between taxation and securities law. I thought I might be a securities lawyer, and ultimately, you know, found the job in tax and chose to go that route.
Okay. So that answers, you know, that basic question. And then you went to work for another firm doing, you know, tax work?
Correct.
Out of law school?
All during law school, I worked for a law firm.
Okay.
Doing tax controversy.
And you stayed with them after law school?
I did. And then we merged into a different firm located in Baltimore, Maryland.
When did you decide to go out on your own?
You know, I guess I decided to go out on my own. Started really early on because I had already learned a lot of the ropes through my job while I was in law school. So when I was an attorney, I had already had, you know, a significant level of experience. So I was comfortable with the work. I had a lot of referral relationships with you know, accountants and other professionals. So as soon as I really started to bring in a significant amount of my own business, I said, hey, I'm young. This is now the time to take the risk. I think it was a great decision.
Yeah. So what were your challenges then when you made that decision?
You know, challenges were really off the bat. There was a lot of demand for, you know, what I was doing. And I kind of made a decision when I started that I was going to devote 50% of my time to networking and client development. And the other 50% of my time, I was actually going to practice law. And, you know, I kind of really stayed true to that formula. And today I'm probably doing less than 50% practice of law.
Well, you know, it kind of falls into that old law joke that says, I want to be a lawyer, so I only work half time. I just have to figure out what half of the day that means.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you start your own practice and you have this this goal to devote 50% of your time, as you said, to client acquisition and business development. When you first opened, did you open in a brick and mortar environment? Did you work from the kitchen table? What was the history like there?
Yeah, so for the first month, I worked primarily out of my house, but I had, you know, for client meetings, I had lots of lawyer friends where I would I would meet with clients initially at their office and their conference rooms.
And then you moved into your own space?
Yeah, I moved into my own space pretty short after. I'd say about approximately a month after starting my own firm, I moved into some space in Annapolis, Maryland.
And have you stayed there? I know right now you have a, as they like to say, you have a plethora of locations. Did you maintain that Annapolis location or have you moved around there?
Yeah, so we moved around in Annapolis. Right. You know, now I own a building and we're headquartered, you know, in Annapolis.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the journey then, because as I mentioned to you earlier, you're a little bit different from our typical lawyer guest in the sense that you're a little further down that path. And so you have the ability now to look back and say, okay, well, how did I get from working from home and hopscotching around friends' offices to a situation now where I have multiple offices in many different jurisdictions around the state and a host of staff and attorneys. So tell us a little bit about that journey. How did you go from 0 to 60?
And, you know, interestingly, I was, I guess, a pure solo where I was the only employee, probably only for about 30 days. So I left the firm. You know, I had a lot, I had a few clients I brought with me. I think it was 6 clients I brought with me. But then, you know, when I went out on my own, you know, the next little while there, for 30 days, I had a significant amount of clients that hired me, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 more during that, that first 30 days.
Good.
What I realized was, look, I can't stay true to my formula that if I continue to go down this path and just do all that work and service all these clients, that I'm going to, you know, my marketing efforts are going to lack. So about 30 days in, I hired a law clerk from law school and she was a CPA candidate. So she had a lot of, you know, tax background already. And so I hired her and I said, look, you know, half the time you spend is going to be administrative. Half the time you'll be doing substantive billable work. And, you know, that worked out really well. Now she's a CPA. And also has her LLM and tax, and she's still with the firm.
Great. Great. So let's talk about that for a little bit, because I think that's a model that a lot of people follow, their first hire being a law clerk or you know, paralegal, if you will. How did you go about finding this candidate?
Sure. So I advertised at the law school, and I had an idea of what I wanted, because, in fact, I was that while I was in law school.
Right. I was going to say, you just kind of wrote up your previous bio and said, need another one of these.
Exactly. Exactly. So I, you know, I reached out to the University of Baltimore where I went to law school, and I told them that this is what we're looking for. And we, you know, she applied, and it was a great fit.
So now you're working with a party of two, and just that process continued to replicate itself. You were able to continue to do the marketing. When you got to a point where you were had more work than you could handle, you kept going out and getting somebody else to do the work for you.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that point was, I think about 30 days after that first hire, maybe 45 days when I realized, hey, this, you know, part-time law clerk, that's not enough. I really need an attorney. And, you know, we made that transition pretty quickly. I found a former classmate of mine who wasn't interested in the position.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you went through in terms of hiring your first associate. You know, for most people, that's a scary proposition. Now you're looking at somebody full-time, not part-time. And it's easy kind of to wrap your arms around a part-time employee, so to speak, because, you know, you don't have a lot of at risk there. But full-time, that's a different story.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I definitely made a leap, you know, but really, it's always been my philosophy that work follows good people. So having good people, having capacity, doing a great job on clients' cases, that leads to additional work. And, you know, that's the most important thing an attorney should focus on, is just doing quality, stellar work, and the work's gonna eventually find them.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case. Now, let me ask you this, that, you know, with an associate, what were some of the challenges bringing somebody on your first full-time hire? I mean, I guess with a part-time hire, you're not talking about a lot of benefits involved or a lot of overhead involved. It's basically an hourly kind of function. But now when you go to full-time, now you've got more things to worry about. How did you handle that aspect?
Yeah, it was concerning. And I think one of the most interesting things is early on in my career, I thought everybody thought just like me, was motivated by the same things as me, mm-hmm. and they're not. And certainly there were different motivations. And I think she was somewhat using the position as a stepping stone for her, which is fine, because I obviously couldn't afford to pay, you know, the same amount of salary that these larger firms could pay. But I think it was kind of a good temporary fit for both of us. She was able to sacrifice, and, you know, I didn't have to pay her a six-figure salary coming out of school, obviously. So there were some compromises and sacrifices from both of us.
Right. What did you do in terms of payroll processing? Did you do your own payroll, or how about HR? Did you do your own
HR? Yes, I did my own HR. With payroll, I'm a big believer in using a payroll company like an ADP or a Paychex, that they do it professionally, because, you know, I'm a tax attorney, and I see all the time that people mess up on their employment filing, and, you know, one mess up is actually more expensive than the cost of payroll processing for an entire year. So it's something that I'm a big believer in, highest and best use, and preparing payroll tax returns and doing all of that is just not, you know, not within my highest best use. So,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, there's a lot of us out there that think, okay, well, for my first associate, I'll be able to handle it myself. I don't really need to worry about getting a payroll processing company involved until I've got, you know, a couple or three people involved. And actually, really, it's just the opposite, isn't it? I mean, the best time to bring on somebody like Paychex or ADP is with your very first hire.
Yeah, it's certainly the cheapest. And, you know, I'll say these systems and processes are much easier to establish when an organization is young. And, you know, so establishing that as like a trial phase on day one is really the best bet than having to transition that later on.
And using a company like that, when you get started, imposes some process and procedure on you yourself that unless you've got some experience running a business and managing a payroll, you may not even be aware of.
Sure.
No, I know that was the case when for me, when I used my previous business, I used paychecks right from the very beginning. And I'm like, oh man, I never would have thought about that. And so it was really very useful. You also mentioned that when you made the transition from working at the firm to your own practice, that you already had some referral partners built up along the way. So is referral marketing your primary methodology for business growth? Or what is your marketing strategy and how has it evolved over the course of time?
Sure. I think initially, absolutely, referral marketing was my number one. And, you know, I would shake a lot of CPA hands, take a lot of CPAs, accountants, financial advisors, other lawyers out to dinner. I did a lot of one-on-one marketing. And really, I try to market myself as, you know, what can I do to help you? What, you know, CPA firms, you know, I know you have this complex tax issue. Call me up. Let me help you walk you through it. And, you know, I don't obviously bill for that time. And I give away a lot of my time to help people. And, you know, I think that in the long term, that leads to reciprocation.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about referral marketing, you always have to come from a perspective of what value can I provide this referral source? And count on, as you said, the concept of reciprocity coming back into play, you know, further down the line. And so it really has to be a position of giving. And so that's how you started. Where are you now in terms of marketing? Is it still primarily referral based, or have you gone on to other and
we've gone on to a lot of different channels. You know, obviously referral marketing is still very significant for us and kind of reputation marketing. And it's kind of as you add attorneys, that your web of people versus increases exponentially. And really keeping what's important is to keep quality control metrics in place, that your brand, your image is associated with quality and a great work product. So that I think we still have a very strong referral network. But certainly now we have a robust marketing department. I have 5 people currently in the marketing department. And we're shifting more heavily, particularly now with COVID, into digital marketing. And so we have people in multiple roles within the digital marketing space. But also we do print media. We have a newsletter, social media, all of those other things.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. For many years, lawyers like you have spent thousands of dollars on marketing campaigns that generate tons of leads, but often left many of them in the dust once the campaign ended. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. Their content loop system not only nurtures all of your leads and contacts in perpetuity, but it's done by pushing out quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing efforts actually work. Spotlight Branding's content loop makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community with their content loop by producing engaging content that speaks to your clients' needs and fears, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free download that explains the content loop and how you can put it into practice in your law firm's marketing strategy. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, spotlightbranding.com/TLE to get your copy. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher ROI. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. You said you have 5 people in your marketing staff. They're all in-house?
All in-house. Yeah, I effectively built an online advertising agency within the law firm.
Well, it sounds that way. I know complete agencies that don't have 5 people yes. in them. So tell us about how does that work? I mean, how is that structured and how do you provide visibility within the entire firm to the endeavors that the marketing department is putting forth?
Well, and I think it goes back to that initial philosophy of when you're networking, what can you do to help people? And so we have people that are devoted to putting out timely content. And more so, for instance, a good example of it is with the PPP loans. We had, you know, a team of people, attorneys and marketers, putting together content and distributing it to the public very timely. You know, people are spending the night in the office and putting out these pronouncements as quickly as possible because we wanted to just disseminate as much information as possible to help people, to educate them. It's not that we were profiting off of any of that. We just wanted to make sure people had a digestible version of what was going on.
And what did that look like?
So we put out we rolled out a website devoted to COVID resources, www.askfrost.com. We put out lots of relevant articles on our website, on our newsletter. Uh-huh. And we also participated in many, many seminars for professional organizations.
Now, were those online?
Yes. Yeah, online.
Okay. Yeah. Did you reach out to these third parties to say, hey, let's host a webinar together on PPE for your clients and we'll provide all of our expertise, or did they reach out to you, or a combination of both?
Yeah, I think a combination of both. Certainly a lot of them reached out to us because we were putting out so much information so quickly that a lot of people weren't reaching out to us.
Great. The techie side of me always wants to know, what was the platform that you were using for your webinars?
So we let the organizations themselves choose the platform.
Okay.
You know,
so in some cases,
GoToMeet, Google Hangouts.
Really, so all the above, essentially.
Sure. Yeah, just about everything. Every platform we've been on, for sure.
Tell us a little bit about the print media involvement, because that's not an area that we talk about very much on this podcast. I don't know. It seems to me that opportunity is shrinking a little bit. Am I mistaken?
I would agree. There's, you know, some professional organizations, some accounting organizations that we typically put advertisements in their newsletters and in their, you know, magazines.
So very targeted print advertising campaigns. You're not putting an ad in People magazine, for instance.
No. There's Best Of magazine where sure. Different jurisdictions and they've selected us as lawyers and we'll put ads there, or Super Lawyers magazines, those types of things. We'll do some print media. That stuff is hard. It's hard to measure. I think there's an indirect marketing, and I think that's more of a indirect kind of get your name out there type of marketing.
And I think it's to some extent it's a luxury that you have as a result of your success in other endeavors, because it's not a primary source, but it certainly be complementary, as you say, and as long as it's targeted the way you've targeted it. Tell me a little bit about organizational structure. I know a lot of firms, as they grow, they struggle with how best to organize their resources to deliver value to their clients. Did you have any experience along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, we're a very big believer in the leverage model. So partners are leveraging, senior attorneys. Senior attorneys are leveraging associates. Associates are leveraging paralegals. Paralegals are leveraging administrative support. We're a huge believer in leverage and having a team to support you underneath. So that's very, very important to us. And secondly, I brought on approximately 2 years ago a chief operating officer, and he's also head of our marketing as well. And he's helped us tremendously with systems and processes and putting together manuals and having kind of internal training and kind of that internal infrastructure that is really necessary when you're growing a substantial organization.
Well, when you get to be where you are, it's even more critical. I mean, I think it's critical for growth in and of itself, from zero to five. It's the best use of your time in terms of positioning yourself to scale even higher. But when you get to the levels that you're at, it's critical. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to function at all.
That's correct. And I look at really my role as managing partner is kind of to assess the organization and really to look at each individual and say, hey, how can I make this person's life easier? What are they doing that they don't need to do? How do I provide them the proper support to make them very successful? And, frankly, lawyers are overworked. Lots of the work that they're doing could be done by someone else. So if I can make my employees' life better, they're going to be happier, they're going to do a better job for the clients, they're going to have a rewarding career. And that's a really important component of what I do, is how do I make each person's life better who works here at the firm.
Going back to the organizational structure for a second, are you organized vertically by location, or is it by element of tax law kind of function?
Yeah, it's certainly not by location.
Okay. So
it's by practice area. And for the first 5 years of the firm's history, we were a pure tax firm. We did tax controversy. We referred everything else out. I didn't want to touch anything else. The last 4 years, we've actually been building out a couple of other complementary practice areas. So we're not just a tax firm anymore. We do tax, business, and estate planning and administration, as well as litigation. So currently, the structure of the firm is organized by practice area. I'd say broadly, there's three practice areas. We have tax, we have estate planning and administration, and then we have business law and litigation. They're all kind of really separate and distinct silos. And underneath of them, there's dedicated attorneys and staff that are dedicated to each of those practice areas. Now, there are a few attorneys that kind of switch disciplines and do some tax work, some estate work, or maybe there's attorneys that do some business work and some tax work. Mm-hmm. So, but those three kind of silos are how we currently distinguish it.
And going back to your COO and the devotion to building good procedures and policies and what have you, Are you doing that manually, or are you using something electronic to maintain all your policies and procedures in? Or
we have something, a program called Notion, and everything is kept in that program, and each employee has their own login.
Interesting. So it kind of structures the policies and procedures under this platform?
Yeah, it's structured under this platform. It's a cloud-based platform, and policies, procedures, employment manual, training videos, training content, all of that is organized under the platform, as well as different form documents that are frequently used. There's employee directory that, you know, kind of gives a background of all the employees and whatnot. So it's a significant internal resource for us.
Interesting. I had not heard of that before. So that I'll have to take a dive into that. Along the way, I'm guessing everything worked perfectly. You never had a single problem or issue.
And exactly.
And life was rosy from the day you started until today. But on the offhand chance, you know, that there might have been a problem somewhere along the line, what would you tell our audience about in terms of a mistake you made that you wish you'd have done otherwise, or what you learned, a lesson that you learned from something that didn't turn out the way you had hoped it might?
Yeah, sure. I think a couple of things is, you know, as we've grown, it actually has gotten easier. I'll say there's a size and that is very difficult. You know, when you're four attorneys and one of your attorneys leaves and there's 25% more workload for everyone to deal with, to have to split that up three ways, that's a significant amount of workload to add on to attorneys' plates. But when you're 25 lawyers and one lawyer leaves, it's not a big deal to divvy up those cases amongst the rest of the lawyers. So there, it's gotten to a point where scale has helped. But I'll say a lesson is really, I think it's important to cross-train your employees and to have kind of redundancies within your organization so that there's multiple people that know how to do a role. If somebody's out sick or if somebody happens to leave your firm, it's very good to have somebody that's already trained to kind of take over those responsibilities and whatnot.
Anything else that comes to mind that's something that didn't work out the way you had hoped?
As you're growing organizations, right, there's always people that are unhappy and yeah. You know, there's, you know, and really trying to figure out how you manage internally, you know, internal morale and corporate culture. And that's, you know, you're certainly struggling in the beginning and it's hard to communicate as really a solo practitioner or small firm. It's hard to communicate fully your vision and your strategy and all of that. So there are people that are unhappy and, you know, I think communication is really key in explaining what the vision and the plan is. But if there's individuals within your organization that are unhappy and are inherently unhappy, I'll say they're cancerous individuals. And really, you know, it's not good for the organization's morale. So, you know, what we've learned is if we have one of those individuals, and frankly, we haven't had one in a long time, people overall are very happy. But, you know, we've terminated people because of it.
That old adage, hire slow, fire fast, right?
Correct.
Well, and speaking of hiring, you know, you talked about how you brought on your first legal assistant and your first associate. What's the hiring process like now? Have you formalized that more as you've gotten larger? Or do you use any type of personality testing as some people do? Or what's that process like?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer of hiring for the future. So I'm always looking out 6 months to a year and saying, okay, who will I need 6 months from a year from now? And sometimes somebody comes across my plate that's too good to be true. And although the position may not be available today, we hire them just because they're such a great fit. But so I'm always constantly interviewing. I interview people almost on a daily basis.
Is that right?
Yes. And now we have established, so after I do those interviews, we have established a hiring committee amongst some of the senior attorneys here at the firm. And we run everybody through that hiring committee prior to making them a formal offer. Now, we do that for, I'd say, attorneys and paralegals, but we don't necessarily do that for the administrative staff.
Right. And then, look, finally wrapping up here, so strange world we live in at the moment with COVID and what have you. How have you adapted in terms of how you run your office, how you deliver services to your clients, how you communicate? What's changed, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, you know, we do bi-weekly virtual meetings, which are great. You know, everybody at the firm hops on a Zoom call for over lunch for an hour. And we give everybody updates on what's going on at the firm. We do have a training room, and everybody used to pack into that training room, and we used to do it live, but now it's all done virtually, and actually it's been seamless. And so I think the virtual world really has allowed us to become more efficient. I've seen hours overall increase, efficiencies increase. You know, we're very excited. So I say our core business is tax controversy, and obviously the pandemic has created more tax controversies than ever. But I think more importantly, it's created a situation where meeting in person is not expected. So, you know, we have clients located all over the place. We do a lot of international tax matters with clients all over the world, do a lot of work for clients in Florida and LA and everywhere else. And when I used to land a big client in Florida or in California, I used to have to travel and meet them. Now we don't have to do that. So we've really looked at it as an opportunity for us to expand geographically and devote more resources into other markets.
And are most of your people working remotely?
Most of the administrative staff, 9 out of 10 of them, are physically located in the office. I'll say the attorneys, it's probably about half and half.
Okay.
Some attorneys come in, some, you know, a couple days a week. Some attorneys don't come in at all. Some attorneys are here every day. So it's probably 50% the attorney.
But you have the flexibility, given technology where it is today, what's expected to manage that process.
Yeah, and we had that in place prior to COVID. I was always a big believer in cloud programs. So really, all you need is an internet connection and you're plugged in to practice law. So really, we didn't change much there.
Interesting. Well, listen, Glenn, it's been fascinating to catch up with you and get to know a little bit about how you've built your practice. If our audience wants to touch base with you and follow up, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Absolutely. They could reach out to me by email. That email is Glenn, so G-L-E-N dot Frost, F-R-O-S-T, at frosttaxlaw.com.
And we will have that in our show notes. So I want to again thank you for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.